The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com.
How you learning to do that?
Been on a roll a while. Learn a few things.
Is what you do for a living?
This and that.
Odds and ends?
Yeah, odds and ends.
That means you're doing nothing.
Yeah, is that what it means?
It's true you were in prison?
Yes, it is.
What'd you do?
I sold guns. I got caught.
My father sold guns too?
Sometimes, yes.
You're lying.
I don't lie.
Did he get caught?
No, he was smarter than I was.
What was he like?
Well, you look just like him, but you act like your mom.
I want to know how he died.
What did your mama tell you?
She won't talk about it.
She probably has good reason.
She keeps secrets, you know.
That's what my mom and pop-pop used to say.
One time, I heard them call her a communist, like it was a dirty word. Then they started following us.
Who's they?
The FBI. They follow us home sometimes. Then they started tapping our phones. Still do. He was killed here, you know. Ma thinks I don't know. It was in here in the living room. Jimmy said he shot 50 cops before they got him.
I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back for another one of our Maryland Film Festival conversations. One of the films coming to the festival this year is Night Catches Us. It was one of those films that was in part developed here out of the Maryland Film Festival. Tanya Hamilton is the writer and director. She joins us here, as does Sean Costello, one of the producers, and shortly we'll be joined by Ron Simmons, another producer. And Tanya Hamilton and Sean Costello, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Tanya, tell us, let me start by asking you about your sojourn with this film and where it started for you, writing it and developing it, and why.
It started a long time ago. I wrote it back in 1999 took it that year to Sundance, to the Writers and Directors Lab. Then it's really taken from that time until now to get it made. Along the way, there were many sort of ups and downs to try to kind of find the financing for it. And Sean Costello, who was one of the film's producers, and I got together, I'd say maybe, I don't know, what, Sean, 4 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and further developed the screenplay to really get it to the point where, what you see on the screen now. And then Ron Simons came in, and we all made this film together. We shot it last June, and here we are. And I think that the motivation for making it, I think in many ways, is this avid interest that I have, I think, in both the civil rights era and also in the post-civil rights kind of, black power, Panther era, and really being interested in that sort of, part of American, history. I think I wanted to try to make a movie about people who were coming home from a war. I'm a big fan of, The Deer Hunter and Coming Home. Those are two movies I really admire a lot. And, I think I tried to kind of distill in a way the idea of sort of the Panther movement into, people who had gone away and fought a really brutal war. And now how are they going to kind of try to put their lives back together and live, these very kind of mundane minutia-filled lives, but with this really enormous thing that they'd gone through on their backs. So, you know, that's really the bulk of it.
I will talk a bit about all the things you just said, the big things you said, not diminutively little, and because you did cover that, and it was just that's what I think the film spoke to very, very clearly. Sean, what tell us about your part in this as producer and how in these independent films. You've been producing. You do a lot of strategic thinking and things about producing in terms of finance. I'm very curious from your perspective how to talk a bit about that story and how difficult it is to kind of put things together for a film like this, which is an independent film.
Well, these films, so I've worked on a few films that have gone to Sundance, and they are, you know, works of love, I would say. You know, you work on them for a long time. You develop them for a long time, and you hope that you get a team together that feels passionately about it. You just keep working at it, because these films take a long, long time to get to the screen. And you just have to hope that the team you put together and the talent and the writer-director and the financiers all sort of see the same vision. And so as a producer, you just have to make sure that you everyone continually focused on that one vision, and just keep supporting the writer director. It's really all about that.
And you'll have to have a synergy between the two of you to make that happen as well, and for the topic.
I'd say totally. I mean, Tanya can speak more about that, but she and I have become close personal friends as well, and just want to keep working together. You know, we talk way too many times a day during the whole process. For the future, I know I feel this way and she does as well. Just excited to work together again because it clicked. You know, we really liked working together.
And Tanya, let's talk about go through the cast for us and talk about how you found them and who they were, and at least the leading cast members, because I think that you clearly thought through it and came up with some remarkable people for this particular production.
Well, I think that, I'll credit our incredible cast to the woman who cast the film, this woman named Lois Drapkin, who's a casting agent in New York and is also somebody, who's just extraordinary and really smart and just knows her job. You know, this film took such a long time to make that we started out with a very different cast. We had a couple actors who, are really pretty amazing, and they were attached for a very long time. But, I think that just the way that kind of these things work, when we finally had the financing, it's just all about schedules, and we couldn't get those schedules to fall into place. And Anthony Mackie is someone who I've always really admired, and I think he's, sort of this extraordinary actor, and he has such this really incredible sense of naturalism, and he was someone who I always sort of, you have like this little handful of people you're interested in for a particular part, and he was always someone who was, very much in my mind. And so we just were lucky, that when the actor we had attached wasn't able to do it, we were able to go to Mackie and he was free. And his people worked with us to really kind of make the whole thing happen. So that was just a great synergy. And then for Kerry Washington, who plays Pat in the film, she had worked with Mackie before. They have this great kind of, very natural relationship off screen, and it shows really well on screen. And so again, Lois was able to, really make that happen. And once we had our, two leads, there are people who just kind of really walk through the door. I mean, Jamie Hector, who plays Do Right in the film, sort of Mackie's kind of nemesis, once a Panther, kind of living in Philly, in the late 70s, I'd seen him on The Wire, and I, of course, was a big Marlowe fan.
Yes, right.
Wire fan. Yeah, right. I mean, he's pretty great, and he came in just for the audition, which I was like, everyone in the office is like, Marlo's here, Marlo's here. It's sort of funny. And he was so unlike what, you know, what I had seen on screen, which I thought was surprising and exciting. And just, you know, we were just lucky to have him.
It's wondering when you show up.
Hey, I am, baby.
What can I do for you, Dwayne?
Oh, that's how it's going to be.
That's your name, ain't it?
I got a message from the brothers.
They sent you?
Things done changed, snitch. I'm in charge now.
Same old Dwayne. Got everybody fooled, huh? Look, I'm only here for a week, then I'll be gone.
Oh, you think that changes things?
Go home. Dwayne.
Call me that again. Go ahead, say it again. See what happens. You're not even gonna see it coming, snitch. One day the light is gonna go out. Nobody's forgotten what you did to Neil.
Wendell Pierce, you know, who plays a policeman in the film, is someone I have known for actually oddly a long time.
A wonderful man.
And also someone who Ron Simons, the other producer, has a personal relationship with. And so, you know, again, we were just, you know, it was like the summer of being lucky, really, last June. And you know, and then we did a very long search for the girl in the film, Jamara Griffin, who plays Iris. Pat's daughter, and found her in Philadelphia with some really wonderful local casting people here at Mike Lemon Casting, and then, you know, and so that's that, you know, and there's a guy named Amari Cheatham who plays Jimmy, who's kind of the, you know, the kid who's really dealing with, you know, kind of, I don't know, you know, sort of having that indelible kind of mark, you know, that thing kind of burned into his brain from the heydays of the Panthers. But he sort of was too young to be a part of that movement.
But the most damaged of the characters.
Absolutely, absolutely. I say that he's definitely very damaged and really just, you know, searching for his place, really, and not really being able to find it. And that's, you know, he's played by a guy named Amari Cheatham, who, again, is just someone who Lois knew prior, you know, to us, you know, all getting together, and he just walked in the door one day, and all of us, when after he left, we all just kind of looked at each other. We're like, wow.
I just think that the cast here was an important thing to talk about, because, you know, Anthony Mackie, who did that incredible performance in The Hurt Locker, and his role in this was just wonderful. I mean, the sensitivity he played it with and the way he kind of embodied this this man of noble moral character who embodied the best of what the Panthers had.
Yeah.
And you had, I mean, Kerry Washington's character, Pat, for me, was this woman that was really also very prototypical in some ways of people who had come through that movement and had said, okay, I'm going to go in a different way and I'm going to build a life as a lawyer or a doctor or a social worker or as the guy who ran the Panthers here. Paul Coates, who's the father of Ta-Nehisi Coates, the writer, built this incredible printing company and became a, you know, that's a path some people took.
Yeah.
You know, and it was very tough because you never knew from that period who really told, who snitched, who did what, who really killed, who really, I mean, you didn't know. And that's the kind of sense you got, that kind of the murkiness was all through this, which I thought was pretty good, more than pretty good.
Yeah. I think that you know, that's the hope, I think, for all of these characters, is that they, you know, they're all kind of carrying this baggage and they're so complicated, you know, or that was very much the goal, to kind of make these people who, you know, I think were struggling, but, you know, also trying to kind of find ways to make changes either from the outside or from the inside, or, you know, kind of flawed characters like I think the Marcus character is, and Mackie playing it so, you know, so brilliantly. Of somebody who, you know, though he is of absolute moral character, there's, you know, the struggle is so great for him in a way that the only thing he can, you know, kind of do is to run until, you know, he has to kind of figure out, can he stay? Can he face these things? And, you know, I think the hope is that they're all so complicated that people can find great empathy for them, you know, for all the things they might have done and the things that they're doing.
Is this Sean?
Sorry, there's a scene in the movie that speaks to a bit of what you just said that I always loved.
And what's that?
Anya, who I think just nailed it in the script, even from one of the first versions I read. But when Pat's boyfriend says to her, you know, when he's leaving her, it says, "You're all fucking imaginary ghosts." And what it says to me was that there was an internal struggle within the movement of some individuals who wanted to sort of find their new path, and some individuals who wanted to sort of continue to fight the fight. And what Tanya seemed to nail was that internal struggle that was going on in the movement 10 years later. It's one of my favorite aspects of the script, because it was complex and interesting and unique, and it wasn't simple, and it really made for, you know, for a movie that was a very special story.
He has nowhere to go.
Could you put us first for once?
That's not fair.
No, it's not fair. Those grubby kids who steal my change when
Carrie.
I'm not looking.
Or your cousin Jimmy, who lived on the third floor for over a year. You could always move in with me.
No, I live here. This is my home. I have roots here.
You're living in the past, Patricia. This house, this neighborhood, you're all fighting imaginary enemies.
This is Rod, by the way. I would have to agree with what Sean is saying, is that that's one of the things that drew me to playing the role of Carrie in the film, is that he is the impetus and catalyst and voice, if you will, for, you know, what's going on underneath and what torrential storm that's happening that he seems to be aware of, but Patricia may not seem to be aware of, and that is, you know, that she is stuck in the past, that things have continued to move forward, and the movement, as far as he was concerned, in the minds of other people as well, that the Black Power, Black Panther movement had its heyday, and that there were other priorities that needed to be looked at from his perspective, which differed from the movement, of course, and people there involved.
Right, and the difficulty of letting go is a paramount struggle in this film. I mean, how do you let all that go that you've been through? And I think that when you talked, Tanya, earlier about likening your view of this to somebody who'd gone through a war with all the post-traumatic stress issues and all the issues of how do you live a quote-unquote normal life after doing that, is really was spot on in terms of what people go through, I think. And that is very, I've never seen that portrayed that way in a film like this about that period.
I think it was a big part of why I thought, you know, why I wanted to write the story and why I tried to make the characters, you know, who they ended up being.
Let me ask the three of this question, because I see that, and I know that you know that Tanya, you have other ideas that you're going to be writing, and clearly Ron Simmons and Sean Costello, you'll be producing other things and perhaps maybe collaborating again and moving ahead with other projects. I see the projects you're working on. And I'm curious what the three of you think about what era we may be embarking on in film, especially with film from people of color in America. It's not because it's there's a new world of brewing in this country. And in some ways, the work that you all are working on speaks to that new world. And I wonder what you think, combine that with how the big Hollywood companies are just not doing the work they did, and that independents are coming up. There's an energy and synergy here that I'm very excited about watching. I think this is part of it. Let me start with Ron and then go to Tanya and Sean.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like the kind of movies that I'm interested in making, often Hollywood, even in the past, when in its heyday, I didn't see a good bit of representation, you know, communities that were either communities of color or just voices that weren't heard very frequently. I, like you, though, do feel that we're at a time now where studios have either downsized or sold off or just dissolved some of their specialty houses, that we are now in a time and a place where independent filmmakers who might otherwise not have had an opportunity to have their work seen or distributed or gotten exposure for, I think now is a time when I think there is a possibility for our work to be seen and taken seriously, and also possibly to an increase in terms of exposure. I know that now there, with recent events, you know, with the WGA and the strike that had happened, and mm-hmm. and then also with the studios downsizing and in the economy, that many studios had cut back on production. And the sense that I feel is that, I don't know if that's going to continue, but the sense that I get is that now films and projects that are smaller in nature, that are self-started, are getting more often looked at. And that's, for me, a very exciting opportunity, because, you know, whether you're dealing with people of color or LGBT communities or issues of immigration or what have you, where there have been here and there some exposure and projects, I think now there potentially, and this is maybe me being a little too optimistic, that there is a chance for us to actually get our work seen on a higher level and more frequently looked at. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that is the case, and that will be a continuing trend if there is one.
Tanya Hamilton, how do you see the future with that?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I'll be the unsophisticated one here. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little cynical. I don't, you know, I think that I think it's hard. I don't think that there is much of a viable, you know, financially viable, commercially viable, you know, indie world of color. And so I think it's hard. And I think the work has to be good, but I think it has to be saleable. And sometimes I think those things are competing, you know. And I think it's as much a readjustment perhaps on how, you know, us as people, you know, consumers, you know, viewers of film, you know, it's as much sort of a readjustment of what we're willing to eat. And so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fully unsure. I'm going to make a second film. I have no idea how difficult it will be, because
uh-huh.
the first one was really hard. So I don't know. What do you think, Sean?
After that. you know, I'm probably somewhere in the middle. You know, I think to speak to Tanya's point about how hard it was to get this film made, you know, I have the only, I'd say that getting independent films done is always hard. You know, I did one about, the last one I did was probably 5 years ago. And I don't think it was any easier or harder than this one. And, you know, it was a different economy, and I think people are always talking about the ups and downs of the economy, and as it relates to independent film, it's always hard, in my opinion. And so you just have to go out there and make it. But as it relates to African-American films, As a white producer on what people call an African American film, I never sort of saw it like that. But trying to raise money for an African American drama was a unique thing for me, because I did that part. I did see as a harder struggle, and I was pretty surprised that people had conversations with me that shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they would just tell me that they didn't want to, they didn't see the viability in it, And I'm not saying that's the case. I don't think that's true. Right? But there are people out there who, you know, would say that to me. And so I think it's a mix. I think I always believe you have to get these things done. You have to believe in yourself. You have to find good stories and good writer directors like Tanya Hamilton. And then you have to get it done.
I think that's really interesting. I think in some ways, what the three of you just said, in thinking about this particular film, in some ways this film, though it was about an era almost 40 years ago when these people were inhabiting 40 years ago, it speaks to what you're talking about right now. about how much we've come, how far we've come, and how far we haven't.
Yeah.
You know. This has been. I'm really looking. Are you all three coming to Baltimore for the film?
I will be there.
Yes, I will be there. Unfortunately, I won't be there. I have another commitment, but I feel quite happy that both Sean and Tanya will be able to represent more than adequately.
Well, this has just been an incredibly good conversation and just a wonderful movie. And we were talking with Tanya Hamilton, writer and director, and Ron Simmons and Sean Costello, the producers of the film Night Catches Us, about the aftermath of, not the aftermath, but of people who lived through the struggle of the Black Panther Party and trying to live a different life and the pain and torment and joy that goes through all of that, with an incredible cast, as we said, including the man you know well who played Marlo, but Anthony Mackie and Kerry Washington, Jamie Hector, Wendell Pierce, and a brilliant, is her name Jeremy Griffin? Is that Jeremiah?
Jamara
Griffin, who's just an incredible young actress, a kid. She's just played a wonderful role. And Amari Cheatham is Jimmy, a very tortured kid who's just all that together. And Night Catches will play at the Maryland Film Festival Friday, May 7th at 2:30 at the Charles Theater. I'll be there, and you should be there as well. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show. Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538.